Hi everyone, a very warm welcome to our listeners for season 7 of the Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi and I'm the co-host of the podcast. And we are very excited to have with us today Dr. Ed Lee. Dr. Ed Lee is a physician, healthcare executive leading clinical innovation at NABLA, where he focuses on bringing AI into real-world care delivery. And he was with Kaiser Permanente for a long time. We have some very good questions about that for you, Dr. Lee, today. And at NABLA, he's working at the forefront of ambient AI and clinical co-pilots, helping translate cutting-edge models into tools that actually work in everyday workflows. And with that introduction, I'll hand it over to you. Welcome once again to the podcast, Dr. Lee.
Hey, Ritu. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, thank you for being our guest today and really excited to, you know, ask you some interesting questions, I would say. So let's get started. We all know that Kaiser Permanente operates as, you know, a fully integrated system, payer, provider and care delivery. So how did that structure shape your perspective on what good looks like in clinical workflows? And how did that influence, you know, your thinking when you were building tools at NABLA? We really want to find out more about that.
Yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed my time at Kaiser Permanente. That's where I actually learned how to be a real practicing clinician, seeing patients, having a large panel of patients to take care of over decades, really. And it really taught me how important it was to be able to use technologies that allow clinicians to focus on their patients. At the end of the day, what we want to do is deliver high quality, personalized care to our patients. And quite often, technology can get in the way of that unintentionally. And I think what we want to do now with that understanding is moving forward and building technologies that will allow us to bring the human side of care back to patient care, back to healthcare, and to remove friction that technology may have introduced in between patients and physicians and clinicians in general, and take away that friction, elevate the care that we provide by decreasing the administrative burdens that clinicians have to face, and then really making patients at the forefront of what we do every day in healthcare.
Yeah, great answer. So, you know, that leads directly into my next question, which is that at Permanente and all your time there, what did you learn about, you know, the human side of adoption? Because that's what we've been hearing recently from most of our guests, that driving clinicians to change behavior versus resisting, even when, you know, the technology is objectively better. And like we're hearing, you know, AI is passing all these tests. It's like beating doctors, it's, you know, getting there, but obviously behavioral change is really hard. So how did you kind of grapple with that?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I always mention is change management. Mm-hmm. And the change management piece is often the hardest part of implementing new technologies. It's not the technology. Yeah. The technology can often speak for itself, but mm-hmm. making sure that clinicians understand the why. Clinicians in general are very scientific, they're results driven, they're looking for evidence about why things should be done. And if you don't come in with that mindset, and if you don't involve clinicians from the very beginning of the implementation of a new technology project, you're often destined to fail, unfortunately. The AI has been around for a little while now, a short time when you look at the grand scheme of how technology has been implemented within medicine and healthcare in general, but the impacts are starting to be quite evident. You mentioned how AI can sometimes answer test questions better than human physicians and clinicians sometimes. But I still feel like the technology out there, the AI out there is really there to augment the mm-hmm. clinician and the experience that the clinicians have with their patients. And it's not there to replace clinicians. It's still up to the clinician to incorporate the information that AI brings into the conversation. And it's important for that human in the loop component to always be there to make sure that we're doing the right thing for our patients.
Yeah, that's the conversation we were having 6 months to a year ago. But now as we are seeing more and more co-pilots doing more and going beyond like drafting notes and actually suggesting the clinical context, then how do you, you know, still maintain clinician trust and ensure that judgment isn't, you know, subtly being outsourced to the system? Because it's just so easy, like even with, you know, writing code, because that's our kind of context here. We don't have, you know, a medical background, but even with code, we are seeing slowly that it becomes so easy to just sit back and just let the Claude Cowork or whatever, keep generating code. And it, the more you engage with it, the easier it gets to just like sit back and just let it keep doing everything. So what are your thoughts on that? We would love to hear that.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, the easy thing isn't necessarily always the right thing. And what we see with the AI generated outputs is that sometimes it can be very convincing. I've done it myself. I've plugged things into ChatGPT and gosh, it sounds so well written that it makes it feel like, gosh, this has to be the truth. But and in fact, we know that the current LLMs out there are basically word prediction models that are putting out generated text. And quite often, yes, they are quite often correct and quite often bring new insights into the way that I'm thinking about clinical scenarios. But at the same time, what you get is based on what you put in. And It often requires a clinician and a clinician expertise to be able to put in the right prompt, to be able to bring in all the right factors in which a clinician is thinking about a particular scenario to be able to get the right output back out. And that's where I have some concerns about having these tools being ready available to all people out there, all patients out there, in that they may not necessarily understand all the factors that need to be put into the system, into an LLM model to get the right output out. And then without the clinician expertise, being able to filter that and interpret that and then apply it to a real world scenario, you may run into situations where the output sounds very convincing. It has to be true because it's so well written. But in fact, because of the inputs, the output isn't necessarily exactly what you need.
So are you seeing that a lot? We would love to hear about that in the context of Nabla, like in the sense of like, you know, where do you see this product going? And a lot of narrative around the tools of Nabla are like focusing on saving physician time. But what are the some of the less obvious but more strategic forms of ROI that health systems should be paying attention to? Because like you're saying, if it's easy, it's not always right. So you can't just be focused on saying, okay, this, you know, Ambient is helping the physician save like 8 minutes or 16 minutes or whatever. Like, what are some of the other metrics that we should be looking at?
Yeah, it's a great question because early on, physicians were saving an hour a day, a couple hours a day, and that's what the data was showing at that time. Since then, there have been multiple studies that have been put out showing that the time savings is actually smaller than that per encounter. And then, in fact, some clinicians aren't necessarily having less after hours time. I think it varies from clinician to clinician. I mean, some clinicians, they are saving an hour a day, a couple hours a day, and they are saving time in terms of the pajama time that they would have otherwise been doing. But what I have found myself in the use of Nabla and Ambient AI tools and other AI tools in general is that it allows me agency. And what I mean by that is it, I am now able to budget my time in the way that I want to in the care of my patients. So I could rush through my day, compact it more using the AI tools that are available, including Nabla, and finish early. Or I could actually spend the time that I want to spend and invest in my patients and develop those relationships and be more thoughtful around the care that I deliver. And so the amount of time that I could be saving in the global context of patient care time could be more, but I choose to invest that time into developing the relationships with my patients. So one of the ROI pieces that was talked about in the past was time savings, but now a lot of the conversation has shifted towards the cognitive load and the cognitive burden and the joy and meaning that clinicians can get from the use of these tools that they otherwise would not be able to have. So burnout has been shown to be decreased because of the use of these tools. And it's not necessarily related to time saves. It's because now clinicians are doing what they went into medicine to do in the first place, not to work on a computer, not to be a transcriptionist, but instead to be a caregiver, a clinician, a scientist, bringing in evidence, applying that knowledge to improving the care and the lives of the patients that they work with. So that's where I see sort of some of the biggest gains of using this type of technology.
Yeah, I think that answer is a good answer, and it allows us to unpack a lot more, because I remember reading somewhere that now, because of ambient, you know, the doctors are actually maybe articulating more because they know that whatever they speak is going to be registered. And because of that, the patient satisfaction increases more because they feel the physician is being more communicative and actually letting them know things. So I thought that was very interesting, that even like what you're saying exactly, like not just focusing on the time spent, but actually increasing the communication with the patient and resulting in a more meaningful interaction.
It's a really insightful observation and comment there, because it may not have necessarily been one of the things that we would have expected when we first deployed this type of technology. Exactly. But as time has gone on, experience has been gained, as mm-hmm. studies have been done, it really is kind of a win-win situation, because mm-hmm. patients do feel like they are more engaged in the conversation. They do get more explanation from the clinician. And it's sort of a byproduct of the clinician wanting the ambient technology to be able to hear what they're saying, so it's captured in their note. They don't have to write it later on, but the patients gain almost as much as what the clinicians are gaining through the mechanical process of making the technology work, both for the patient and the clinician.
Right, exactly. So that leads kind of into the next question, that, you know, if ambient is then just the first layer, then what does the next phase of AI co-pilots in healthcare look like? And how far do you think we are from that next reality now? What's next?
Next steps are happening like right now, even as we speak. And you mentioned ROI earlier, and I think that there's different ways of looking at ROI. There's the human factors and human components, the software components, as some people may call it, where there's decrease in burnout, increase in retention, recruiting strong clinicians out there who are looking for organizations to have this technology ready, available, and deployable for their use, but also looking at diagnosis capture, coding, making sure mm-hmm. that those financial components, of which are critically important within the healthcare industry and healthcare system, can be captured accurately and justifiably. And I think accurate documentation is very supportive of those goals and those needs, and actually surfacing the right diagnoses, the CPT and ICD-10 codes. Those are all things that are actually happening now and are continuing to be built up. In the future, and not only so in the future, in current present time, these other things are being worked on as well, and around things like chart summarization and incorporating that within the documentation so that it is more complete documentation. There's so much in patients' charts, sometimes decades of information, and being able to distill it down and bringing out the key points that are pertinent to the conversation, pertinent to the actual conditions in which the patients are being seen, can be brought into the documentation and into the conversation and surfaced so the clinician can see that at the point of care. Those tools are available and present, being incorporated into the workflows now. And then transitioning that into clinical decision support. And I think that that's something that clinicians would really be enthusiastic about adopting, as long as the trust factor is there. And I think it's going to take a little time to continue to build that trust. And what I mean by the clinical decision support is really at the point of care, or even before and or after, having AI surface potential diagnoses, treatment options, diagnostic tests, orders to be put into the system, and having all that happen on behalf of the clinician and the patient to make it so that the technology is seamless throughout the entire process, where you're initially seeing the patient, you're documenting, you're putting in the orders, and surfacing clinical information that'll allow the best care to occur.
Yeah. So I think that kind of captures what I was going to ask next, because in one of your answers, you had mentioned friction. And I wanted to ask that in real clinical settings, where do you think it, you know, still falls short, and what needs for it to improve to become truly invisible infrastructure? So I think you kind of answered that, like that's the direction it's going in. To be truly invisible, it has to do more than just the ambient part of it and actually get into these other things that you talked about.
I think it does. And the word friction, to me, is almost visceral, because when you think of friction, it's just things that get in the way of what you really want to get done in the end. In the end, the clinician's goal is to provide the best care for the patient, but there are things that have been introduced into the system in between the patient and the physician over time, with technology that mm-hmm. I think technology can actually help remove. And, you know, some of these tools that are being developed now are amazing. But at the same time, if it's not built in within the workflow, if it adds 5 extra clicks per patient, the clinicians, they're just not going to use it. And mm-hmm. so it's not only necessarily what it can do, it's how it does it and how it's incorporated. And so it really needs to be thoughtful in terms of the usability aspect and the userability aspect of it all so that clinicians can actually adopt it. You can put a tool out there. I talked about the change management piece earlier. Yeah. You put a tool out there and you hope people will use it. As the saying goes, hope is not a strategy. And the strategy really should be around understanding the needs of the clinician, the workflows of the clinician, and building tools into that to make it so that it's really a seamless technology that can be adopted and scaled in a very easy way.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. In several of the questions, we got your perspective, you know, as a clinician, but we, in the podcast, we also like to ask about your origin story and how you, you know, got to healthcare and how you got into this intersection of technology and healthcare and how you understand both sides of it. So, you know, our listeners would love to hear more from you about that.
No, hey, thanks. Thanks for asking that. And I mean, I think early on in my childhood, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. I had a couple of siblings, older siblings, who went into medicine, and I saw the gratification and satisfaction they had in the work that they were doing. And so it was kind of a easy path for me to take when I was thinking about the intersection between science and healthcare and being able to help patients. So that was how I first got into medicine. But I actually thought I was going to be purely a clinician my entire career. And that's what I went into medical school and residency thinking that I would be doing. But along the way, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to have mentors who allowed me to think beyond that, to think about ways that I could exercise my interests beyond healthcare. And I was always interested in being able to do things more efficiently, using technology and incorporating that within the practice of medicine. And so early on in my career at Kaiser Permanente, I was fortunate enough to be involved with different technology products and projects that led me down a path where I saw the magnitude of how technology could affect healthcare in the present and leading into the future. And when AI and the AI boom kind of happened, I saw that being magnified significantly. And that's why I decided to embark on my work with Nabla, being mm-hmm. an innovative company that was agile and really improving the lives of the clinicians who were using the tools. That's why I kind of shifted my career path to work with Nabla and really try to bring this type of technology to all clinicians out there, because I think the burden of clerical tasks, administrative burdens that clinicians face, hinder our ability to provide the best care possible to the patients that we care for. And if we can have technologies like Nabla and other tools that we continue to build using AI and other technologies, I think the healthcare system can not only improve the way that we deliver care, the quality of care, but also the cost of care, I think in general, can decrease because we'll be providing care that is more proactive and less reactive. And I think that type of care is better for patients and actually economically better in the end as well.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Lee. That's always very inspiring for our listeners. And I think what you talked about, proactive versus reactive, we've been hearing that a lot, especially in context with wearables and, you know, this constant stream of information that's now coming in, that's, you know, going to change the flavor of doctor's visits, where you don't wait till you get to see the doctor, but you already have like so much health data, and people are querying ChatGPT and, you know, now Anthropic, and everybody launching these, people are like uploading their entire blood reports and wanting to get answers. So I think, yeah, medicine's going to change very quickly. So I think we're almost at the end, and, you know, it's always great to hear your insights and any closing remarks, any advice you would have for our listeners, and where do you think technology is headed? What are your predictions for the next 1 to 3 years? We always like to ask that as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, Ritu. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation here. And as I think of it, I think at the end of the day, AI it's just technology. I don't mean just technology, but it is just technology. And I've always believed that technology in healthcare is really there to improve how we care for our patients. And if we do this right, it shouldn't feel technical. It should feel more human. It should give clinicians time and attention and presence back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what patients remember. And I think at the end of the day, I think that's what clinicians remember as well. And at its best, healthcare is human. And I think AI should help us get us back there.
Great answer. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee. We really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for being our guest.
Thanks so much, Ritu. Appreciate it.